We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain sensing headband that helps you meditate and sleep, and Meditation Studio, the 5-star app. I'm Patricia Karpus. Our podcast comes to you from Muse, so we invite you to check it out at choosemuse.com. Today's guest is Diana Winston. It's so great to have her back on Untangle. Diana is the director of mindfulness education at UCLA's Mindful Awareness Research Center and the author of several mindfulness books, including The Little Book of Being, Practices and Guidance for Uncovering Your Natural Awareness. Today, we talk about why forgiveness matters and why carrying our anger or resentment around with us is like carrying hot coal. Dropping the hot coal can lead us to more freedom, openness, and joy, which is great for the new year. It doesn't mean we have to condone or forget, but it is truly an act of self-compassion. It's simply good for us, and the practices she teaches can be really powerful. She also shares several practices on dealing with difficult emotions. Lots of good stuff here for us humans. Now, here's Diana. Diana, it's so good to have you back on Untangle. I loved our last interview, and I'm really excited to talk about these topics today.
That's great to be back with you.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about some courses that you've been teaching. And the first topic, which I feel is so important, and maybe even especially as we embark into the holiday season, and that is forgiveness. You talk about three types of forgiveness. And so let's talk about what they are, and then why is forgiveness so important?
Forgiveness can come in three different varieties. So one is that someone's done something that's hurt us, and so we can work on forgiving others for whatever they did to us. And then we've done things that have hurt other people. So how can we either ask forgiveness either as an internal process, or maybe there's some specific external action we need to do? And then the third, which underlies them all, is self-forgiveness, forgiving ourselves for all the things that we have done, whether towards other people or towards ourselves. So those are the three kinds of forgiveness. And I think you're asking, like, why is it important? It's important because holding on to resentment and blame, it's tearing us up inside. It's like holding on to a hot coal, and learning to drop that hot coal can lead to more and more places of freedom and openness and joy. And I'm not saying that's easy to do. It's not easy to do. We absolutely, it's some of the hardest work we may ever do in our lifetime. But there's so much potential for freedom if we can drop these hot coals and let go of the blame and the pain of the past and open. It's like releasing the pain we've carried for actions we've done to another, to ourselves, or that they have done to us. So it's really, really powerful work.
I think that it's tied often to something that we've pushed away or some underlying pain. And I agree with you that it's the hardest thing to do. Fred Luskin, who wrote a book called Forgive for Good, talks about how we ruminate over our grievance stories. We store up these memories and we allow them to take up too much real estate in our brains. And it is true what you're saying, to let go of blame and open to pain, and that it takes a long time. But how does one do this? How do we actually intercept that grievance story that just seems to get bigger and bigger for so many people?
It often is something we don't think about. It's like there was an incident that happened, or maybe a lot of things that happened at some point in our lives. And it tends to be something that we might just lock away because it's too painful. We think about, oh God, I can't believe I did this. And there's a lot of shame, embarrassment with it, or just so much rage. So we lock it away. And I actually think it's a really helpful protective mechanism that keeps us from being in a lot of grief and shame and blame and all those really challenging feelings. But there's a point that sometimes people get to where they go, wait a minute, this is eating me up inside. I realize that I need to do things differently because I don't want to keep holding on to this. And so that's the first step, is making a conscious decision and having the willingness to go, I'm willing to start working on this, even if it takes a really long time, but I'm willing to start working on it. That would be the first step. And then we can talk about the different steps from there.
Yeah, because I was thinking about, in your course, you talk about the stages that we tend to go through: grief, rage, sorrow, fear, confusion. Such difficult emotions are tied to shame, betrayal, rejection, resentments. And so if you have been practicing and you have a somewhat skillful prefrontal cortex or wise mind that can make that conscious decision, which some people have, some people don't, then how do you move through these different stages?
I just want to add, sometimes life makes it so it's not like you made this decision, I'm going to do it now, it's time to work on it. But that person, you're just seeing the pain in the relationship with that person and you go, okay, it's time. I need to deal with that. So that's another way. Like, life makes us do it.
Forces us.
It forces us. Exactly. So the mindfulness practice is really, really powerful and important here when it comes to forgiveness, because forgiveness means tapping into these layers of pain and that you were just talking about, the shame and the resentment, and learning to hold it with a kind of open, compassionate heart. And this is not easy to do. So I do say, for your listeners who are not, like, don't have a lot of mindfulness practice, it takes time and practice to be able to work with these difficult emotions. But what we can learn to do is hold it with a spaciousness, with calm, with ease, and with awareness. And when that happens, oftentimes we see that, oh, it wasn't as horrible as I thought. That's like a big intuition that people get. Oh, wait a minute. It's just pain. It's just this feeling of shame. Here's what's happening in my body. So with mindfulness, with a difficult emotion, we're noticing, one really helpful way to feel difficult emotion is to notice what's happening in our bodies. My heart is racing. My stomach is clenched. My jaw is tight. And really to feel and notice those feelings and allow them to be there with a sense of awareness as you're holding it. And you don't have to do it all at once. I think some people say, okay, now I'm going to sit down and meditate and feel all my anger. And that's like, whoa, that's overwhelming. So what I also recommend when you're feeling difficult emotions is to find something in your body that feels like safe, at ease, or good, neutral. It could be your breath. It could be your hands, your feet, just the tingling sensations in your hands or your feet, whatever you're feeling in your feet. And then what you want to do is move back and forth. So if it feels intense, then go to your feet and just rest there. Feel your feet on the ground. Feel the support of the earth below you, just a sense of that. And then come back and feel again. And you can go back and forth. And that allows us to metabolize the difficult feeling. And again, not easy to do, takes time and practice. But we start to be able to open to that pain. And a couple of things begin to happen. One is that, as I said, it seems like, oh, wait a minute, it's not as bad. I can actually handle this. This is like incredible. And you go, oh, okay, I can be here in the midst of this confusion. I can be here in the midst of this fear, the shame, the blame. And then it begins to attenuate, like it slowly starts to fade a bit and we start to feel more peace and ease. So those things can happen as we do this.
So that's a process and that takes time. You also talk about some Buddhist phrases to repeat that are comforting, and some practices and some questions that we can ask ourselves to help guide this practice or help guide this effort to forgive. What are some of those?
It depends somewhat on which type of forgiveness you're working on. So let's start with the one that I usually start people off with, which is forgiving others. That one is very concrete. We're mad at someone for what they did. And so what would it be like to forgive? So we have the willingness. We begin to work with the feelings using mindfulness. And then there's this, I sometimes call it enlisting the wisdom mind. It's like we all have inside us a wisdom that oftentimes it's obscured, but when we can begin, when we're not at like a level 10 with our emotions, but we've gotten our emotions down to what, like a 4 or 3, and then we can start to ask questions to help us to understand better, because understanding is one of the keys to forgiveness. One of the very first things I ever was taught when I first started my meditation practice was a teacher who said, I always ask myself, when I'm not compassionate, what is it I don't understand? And this is really a key around these forgiveness practices. So forgiving others, we can start to ask ourselves these questions that are enlisting our wisdom mind. Like, okay, so for example, here's the big one. What might my part have been in the incident? It's never a one-way street. Okay, I shouldn't say that. Sometimes there are egregious things that people have done to other people that it is absolutely a one-way street. But in this daily life kinds of anger situations, there may be like, what was my role in it? So as you reflect on your role, you might realize like, oh, well, I don't know exactly what your realization might be, but like, I was avoiding that person or whatever. I mean, I'm just making something up. So that's one thing we can reflect on. We might also reflect on the ways in which they are suffering. So what is it I don't understand about them? Why might they have acted the way they did? Maybe they were having a horrible day. Maybe they were themselves hurt significantly by another person. And as we start to ask these types of questions, we begin to have some insight, and that allows our hearts to soften a little bit. That's what often helps me when I'm trying to understand somebody and forgive. And I want to just give an example because I think that this is, I would say I'm no way very successful with this, but I'll tell you where I am. So as you know, of course, as all of us are dealing with this, that the vaccination issue is so profoundly polarized. I know of many friends that are, people are not talking to each other because of over this. So I have a very strong opinion. I'm really stuck and I feel really angry at the other side that carries a different opinion. And a lot of times it feels good to feel self-righteous, like, wait, I'm right. I don't care what they think. They're wrong. But at a certain point recently, I was like, you know what? I don't want to be feeling that way, especially towards people I love. It doesn't mean that I condone their behavior. And this is really important. I haven't said this yet. Forgiveness does not mean condoning. And it does not mean forgetting. You can still have a strong opinion, but it doesn't mean that you have to hold on to this hurt that is so intense and so painful. So what I started doing, and just in relation to this question, was what is it I don't understand? How can I understand? And I got to the point recently where I was like, the people who feel differently than me, they are trying to protect themselves and their families. And this is what they think is the best approach. And it's different than my approach, but we all want our children to be safe. We all want to be safe. And when I could feel that, and even as I talk about it right now, because it's still very charged for me, I feel like a little bit teary, a little bit of a softening in my body. And I wish they were doing it a different way. I don't believe in it. I have my opinion, but I have a bit more of an open heart and I actually might even talk with or connect with. So this is an example of the hardcore way we can practice this understanding piece.
We carry these often like unenforceable rules or this inner rule book, and we believe that other people should feel the same way that we do. And so we can soften that. And that all makes sense. But when you were talking about, and I think we have to because people are so different. And so our rule book is our rule book. And some of us have a 900-page rule book and it's painful. But when you talk about forgiving someone else and finding that place of understanding, often when we do that, we start to regret. Once we understand someone else's behavior, we might forgive them and then regret some action that we have taken. So we move between this forgiving someone else and then forgiving ourselves.
So that's when you switch to the other forgiveness,
right?
Which is self-forgiveness. And that's a whole practice unto itself that's very powerful. Yeah.
Do you have some practices that you can share that are most helpful? I think with self-forgiveness, something happens. Like maybe you have a small T or a big T trauma from your past, and something happens today, and you don't know why it has such a strong effect on you, but it does. And it may be triggering something from your past. And maybe that's what you're saying about really understanding the signal. Like, what is it, that underlying feeling? But what do you do when your current pain really probably isn't that terrible, but it feels terrible because it's connected to some past trauma? How do you touch into that?
It's actually the same principle that I was talking about before, that, and I haven't talked yet about the kindness piece and self-kindness, but that's the other piece. So it's like the awareness and the compassionate heart, they go hand in hand. And when it's a really major trauma with a capital T, you're not likely going to do it on your own. You're going to need some support. But if it's more minor, or you have tons of skills, or you can begin to touch into it, and you can first of all recognize, like, oh, this is about a past trauma. Isn't that interesting? It's not early, the famous saying, if it's hysterical, it's historical. So you can recognize that. And that in and of itself is a useful piece of knowledge, because you start realizing, like, okay, I'm triggered into something from my past as opposed to what's happening in the present moment. And then finding something, as I said earlier, that feels neutral, at ease, at peace with your hands, your feet, something in your body that's at ease. And if you don't have anything in your body that feels peaceful when this is happening, because you're so activated, look out the window, look at something beautiful, maybe a piece of art, or you can use a memory. And then once you can stay with up for a moment or two with that place of ease, and then come back into, what am I feeling now in my body? And this is where I was saying, heart's racing, stomach is clenched, and holding space for that, meaning just letting it be without an agenda, feeling it with mindfulness, with awareness. And then also adding this dimension of kindness. Like, can we bring kindness? And if you have a loving kindness practice, you may know specifically, like, may I be peaceful? May I be at ease? But you don't even have to have something that cultivated. You could just, what would it be like to send some kindness to yourself? Or imagine your dog sending some kindness to you, or just putting your hand on your chest and feeling the warmth and the care. And that is possible to bring the kindness. So it's that combo of the awareness, the compassion, and the understanding that come together to begin to free up the places that we're stuck in, even if it's past trauma.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety, or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great, and this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now back to our show.
But of course, if it's a big thing, you want to get support.
Is this part of, we talk a lot in mindfulness about the habits and patterns of our minds or our brains, and we seem to, when something happens, repeat the same habit. So if you tend to get angry with someone, you may get angry in the same way. Or if you tend to be hurt, you may get hurt in the same way. With some of these practices that you're talking about, awareness, maybe acceptance even, and kindness to yourself, what should people expect in terms of how long it might take to change the habit of creating the grievance story, or to change the habit of feeling like a victim, or to just having other people or memories take up so much real estate in your brain?
I wish there was a formula that I could answer that question, because there isn't. Everybody's so different. And some people start to do these practices. We haven't talked about the specific forgiveness practice, which I'll share with you in a moment. But people do this practice and they have an epiphany. And it's just like, oh, I don't want to hold on to this any longer. And they drop the hot coal in that moment, just in an immediate way. For other people, it's over and over trying these practices, working on the multi-dimensions of forgiveness. And then it takes time and we just don't know how long. It's like peeling an onion and you just, there's the next layer. Because also sometimes you may have experienced this where, okay, I've forgiven this person for such and such. And then a month, a year, whenever later, you suddenly are angry at them for the same thing again. Wait a minute, I thought I got through this. And it's just the nature of this stuff. So that's why forgiveness, the short answer to your question, it's an ongoing process. It's a continual process, just like being mindful is a continual process. We have to keep learning to let go and to be really, this is really important. There's no timetable and there's no rush. Okay, so don't be like, okay, all right, I've been meditating for 15 years and now I've got to forgive everyone who's ever hurt me. Like, no. It's really, really taking our time, doing it in a very loving, supportive way and paying close attention to ourselves. Like, when I do this, I'm actually feeling better. I finally called that person for the first time in 5 years. That is proof that it's working. You may not be completely free of all of the resentment, but there's little steps that happen. So we keep looking for that and trying to learn more and more with it.
Let's talk about the actual forgiveness practice, because my next question was like inviting people to journal in addition to some of these other practices. But what are some of the practices? Is there a forgiveness practice that is the gold standard?
Yeah. So from the Buddhist world, I learned of forgiveness meditation many years ago, which was essentially all three of those parts together. You essentially think of someone who's hurt you, and then you say in your mind, if knowingly or unknowingly you have hurt or harmed me through your speech or actions, may I forgive you? And then you go on to the next one. By the way, I'm not recommending this. And then you go on to the next person and you say, if I have hurt you in any way, knowingly or unknowingly, through my speech or actions, may I ask your forgiveness? And the third, for ways that I've hurt myself, knowingly or unknowingly, I forgive myself. So the words themselves are absolutely beautiful. The problem with it is like it's so sped up and doesn't give you any space or time for like the nuances of what's really going on here. I said I didn't recommend it. If you're interested in it, please feel free. But what I like to do is to pull it apart. And so when I lead a forgiveness meditation, let's say we're talking about forgiving others, we would let an incident come to mind that you want to work on and notice how it feels when you think of how angry you are at that person for whatever they did to you. And then you check in, like, am I ready to forgive? Because the answer might be no. And if the answer is no, that's good information. You can stop right there. It's absolutely fine. Then we use that language from those phrases, but in a slowed down way, for the ways I've hurt you intentionally or unintentionally, I ask your forgiveness. But then I amend it to say, may I one day ask your forgiveness? May I open to the possibility of one day asking your forgiveness? So you say these phrases with a lot of open-endedness and a lot of space, a lot of possibility, and you say them slowly and you notice what happens as you say them. Like as I say it, oh, actually my heart feels a little more open, or I feel closed down immediately. So you start with these phrases and then I go into these questions, and these can be journal questions or they can be part of the meditation. Is there something here for me to understand? What do I need to know about this person or about me, my part in it? You might notice, are there some words I need to say to myself related to this? Like, I was young, I didn't know, or they were having a hard time when this happened. And then as we go into that, we might explore just bringing some kindness and compassion to the whole body-mind experience, like just holding ourselves with this. And also, I know this sounds complex, but when you do it, I have these guided meditations for it. It's pretty straightforward. But another thing is we use this language, and this is really, really important. Never would I knowingly allow this to happen again?
Right?
Never would I knowingly allow this to happen again. Because that will help us to forgive if we know that we're not going to be a doormat or something and let it keep going. Or if there's abuse, of course, we're going to put our foot down. So this combination, and then you go back to the phrases, may I forgive you? May I one day forgive you? May I consider the possibility of one day forgiving you? Then you keep going. That's a broad stroke overview of it.
Are these meditations on the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center website?
There's a few of them on our, what we call the Hammer podcast page, which has new meditations every week. And I think I did a forgiveness one fairly recently, and there's some from the past. And then I have this course that I did with Mindful Magazine, where I teach all of the meditations.
Oh, great. I think all of this has such a great ripple effect, both for yourself and for other people and for future friendships and relationships and family. But what happens when forgiveness for self taps into the trance of unworthiness or unlovable, those deep feelings of being unworthy? What happens then? Is it the same practice, but it takes longer?
It could take longer, shorter, who knows? But absolutely, you will encounter these feelings because everybody has these feelings of unworthiness. And I think that's Tara Brach who calls it the trance of unworthiness. It's so beautiful. So in the same way that you would approach forgiving others or asking forgiveness for things you've done, we can practice with ourselves. And remembering the same principles, like keeping the long-term view, there's no rush, there's no timetable. We want to have a certain capacity to hold the difficult emotions because sometimes the self-forgiveness stuff, like you were saying, it just can hit into some very painful, deep emotions about how we feel about ourselves. So one of the stories I like to tell just to remind people about, like, you build your capacity over time. And that is the movie, if you remember the movie Jaws. They knew in Jaws that there was something out there in the water. They didn't know what it was. So they go out in that little dinghy and then they meet the giant monster shark. And the very famous line from the movie is, "Looks like we're going to need a bigger boat." So you don't want to meet your giant shark demons inside you with a tiny little dinghy. You want a big, big ship. So part of it is developing a mindfulness practice and a compassion, a self-compassion practice. There's mindful self-compassion. There's beautiful compassion practices that we can do to send more compassion and care for ourselves. And self-compassion is, as Kristen Neff defines it, and I've always liked it, is that combination of mindfulness to work with the difficult thoughts and emotions towards ourselves, self-directed kindness practices. And when you pull those all together, and I also add a fourth, which is recognition of our own inner goodness, that we're not fundamentally flawed. And if we begin to work with all these components, we start to have more capacity to be present with that part of ourselves that's like, I hate this aspect of me, or I did this horrible thing when I was 15. What do I do? You start to have the skills to work with it.
It's what you were just saying. I'd written this down when I was looking through some of your course materials about recognizing our common humanity. And I think what happens, which is why I'm so happy that there's so much growth and awareness of mindfulness practices and mental health challenges. So many people, I'm not happy that people are dealing with anxiety and depression, but I'm glad there are more tools for dealing with all mental health issues. But I think so often people that are going through, whether it's grief or shame or anger, physical pain, even, they feel very alone. And that loneliness, like feeling like you are the only one. And you just said, everyone deals with this. Everyone feels these feelings. And I think that's a really important point to understand, that life can be very messy. We will hurt. Sharon Salzberg says some things just hurt. But to have that awareness of the common humanity might fend off that feeling of being alone in your emotional world.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of ways that you can work with that. One is this practice, for some people, it's really energizing. And for other people, they don't like it, but I'll just mention it, which is, as you let's say you're suffering in a particular way, and I'll just come up with something very minor. Like, let's say you have a toothache. And so as you sit down to meditate and you notice the toothache and feel the pain, you might just take a moment to reflect on all the hundreds and thousands and maybe millions, hundreds of millions of people around the world who have a toothache at this moment. And then as you do that, you can try to send compassion to all of those people. And so that practice can result in this recognition of a shared humanity. For other people, it can feel overwhelming, like, I don't want to think about anybody else's pain. So that's one thing to try. One of the things that I do routinely with students, I teach a course on self-compassion, and I have a game. In person, we used to play it, and now on Zoom, we do it with our hands. But the game is, it's called Stand Up If You dot, dot, dot. And so I'll say, stand up if you've ever, and then people have to stand up. So I'll say, stand up if you have ever really messed up something that was important to you. And then basically what happens, the entire room, and it could be 100, 200, 300 people stand up. And then I say, okay, sit down. And then I'll say, stand up if you've ever felt like a failure. And then what happens? Everybody stands up, and then everybody sits down. Then I say, okay, stand up if you've ever looked in the mirror and not liked what you saw. Guess what? 200 people stand up, and then they all sit down. And then at some point, somebody always shouts out, can we just stay standing? And then at the end of it, I have them just stay standing and look around and say, I want you to remember this, like get this into your bones. You are not the only one. When you think that you're the only one who's ever suffered in this way, remember this. Remember that all of us struggle. And in some way, that can be quite easing.
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, take comfort in Born Shoes. Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now back to our show.
Yeah. You also talk about the fact that forgiveness has a powerful impact on our health and happiness. This idea of feeling connected to others, we all know that that has a powerful impact on our health and happiness. So that is really validating. What role does gratitude play in our forgiveness practice?
I have found that in some cases, it's not always the case, but in some cases, when we're angry at another person for something, if we can remember what we're grateful for in relation to that person, that it opens up your heart a little bit so that the boat becomes bigger so that the resentment feels smaller in relation to the gratitude you have. And I think in one of my courses, I tell this story of a teacher that I was angry at, one of my spiritual teachers many, many years ago. And my friend suggested to me, why don't you write a gratitude letter to him? And I was like, write a gratitude letter? Are you kidding me? I'm so angry. And then they said, well, why don't you just write about how angry you are? So I said, okay, that I can do. And so I started to write, I'm so angry you did this to me, you did that to me, blah, blah, blah. And as I wrote, and finally, after 3-4 pages, I exhausted that. And the next thing I started to remember was all the incredible things that happened in relation to him and all the things he gave me and the ways that he supported me. And all of the gratitude began to flow out of me till the very end when the resentment began to let go. So that was a story in my life when I was able to use gratitude, and I recommend it with students. So the thing we have to be careful of, there are some situations where there was like severe abuse or something, in which case these practices, you got to really back off here.
Yeah, there can be severe situations and trauma, or there can be, sometimes that can lead to regret. So you, let's say, broken up with somebody and you've written down everything you're angry for, and then you start remembering all of the great nostalgic memories that everyone has in the beginning of a relationship. And then you feel like, oh, why did I break up with this person? So I think that some of these things can boomerang a little bit, but maybe it is that bigger perspective and that higher awareness that we have, that we have to trust our inner guidance in the choices that we make and not live in a space of regret. I think regret tends to eat away at people.
Absolutely. But I think everything you're saying makes a lot of sense. And regret, honestly, is another emotion like anything else that we can bring our awareness, our compassion to, and our understanding. What is it? What's behind this regret? Oh, if only I had done it this way. One of the ways of doing the compassion practice is bringing yourself to mind as a child or at some other point in your life and sending compassion to that time in your life. And one of the helpful phrases that we can use is just reminding yourself, I didn't know. I was young. I was ignorant here. Because I think one of the things with regret is we think it should have been a different way. And the fact is, no, it could only be what it was. So how do we have compassion for that ignorant self who at that time acted in that way? So that's a part of working with regret.
Yeah, I like that. And also this phrase, may we accept things as they are. It doesn't mean we don't change them in the future, but there is this acceptance that I think can be really helpful. And this moves me into this other area, which I'd like to talk about. And that is the work that you do on working with difficult emotions, because of course, forgiveness is like unleashes almost all of the difficult emotions. But in your course, you talk about sadness, grief, depression, catastrophizing, beliefs and distorted thinking. And I'd love for you to talk about some techniques for dealing with these difficult emotions. And I know it's a giant area and you have your course, I think is 6 or 8 weeks, but maybe the shortened version of how do we deal with these difficult emotions in a way that can be productive in our lives so we can be our best selves.
There's similarities with all of them, and then there are different approaches depending on the type of emotion. But the similarity is the two things we've already talked about significantly, which is mindfulness of the emotion and kindness and compassion for ourselves in the midst of it. So whatever the emotion is, whether it's anxiety, whether it's grief, whether it's rage, these are the building block tools that we can use with any type of emotion. And with each one, there's different flavors and nuances and things that work better. And a lot of it, of course, gets drawn from different things like cognitive behavioral therapy or different practices that are tried and true. So for instance, with anxiety, one of the ways that we suffer with anxiety is our mind going into the future, planning, catastrophizing, worrying. And so the very important thing that we have to do, actually, particularly with anxiety and depression, is to be vigilant around our thinking. Our thoughts can go in all directions, and we want to use mindfulness not just to feel the feelings, but to notice the thoughts. So when we go off into like, oh no, that such and such is going to happen, and when that happens, I'm going to lose my job, and then I'm going to be on the street, and blah, blah, blah. Thoughts are like, they're like snowballs. They start with a little tiny bit of snow, and then they just grow and grow and grow until they're gigantic. And so we want to try to learn to notice the thoughts when they're smaller, essentially. And we can use mindfulness of thoughts using what we call labeling. Like we can say catastrophizing, worrying, obsessing, like use the word it's almost like you're cutting it off at the root there. Now, not that that necessarily will work. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Another analogy I like to use are thoughts are like trains. Right? Thoughts are like trains. They leave the station and then 20 minutes later, you realize, whoa, I'm 20 miles down the station, down the road. So at that point, we can get off the train or we cannot get on the train in the first place. We can stay at the station and let the thoughts go. So working on the level of thoughts is absolutely key with particularly anxiety and depression. Also, you can use some of the other tools that I mentioned, enlisting the wisdom mind. So when you go into worst case scenario, you can ask yourself, is that true? Is that really going to happen? What evidence do I have for that? So ways, once you're down, you're not at a 10, you're at a 4 or 5 or 6 or something, then you can start to enlist the wisdom part of your mind or use other techniques such as techniques from cognitive behavioral therapy or something like that. So that's with anxiety. And depression works the same way. The problem with depression is it's like you put on a pair of eyeglasses and you see the world only through that lens. And so that is, it's even hard to do these practices. And oh, that's something I want to mention, just to say that when you have extreme high levels of, for instance, panic or high level of depression, or you're at a huge rage stage or something, you're not going to do mindfulness. Like, it's just not going to work. You want to do something that brings it down, whether it's medication, therapy, taking a walk. It depends on the situation before you can even do these practices. I think I was talking about sadness and depression. So it's almost like we need to learn these processes of taking off these glasses. How do we take off the glasses and begin to see the world as it is? And that's not easy to do. But this deep compassion that we can learn to cultivate for ourselves in the midst of the grief is actually possible. It is possible to be sitting there feeling horrible. And there's this little voice inside us that's like, I'm okay. I'm okay. Or I'll get through this. Just even if it's like a whisper. Those are some just little tools for working with those two. And then we can go into anger if you want, but we're not.
Yeah, let's go into anger. I think in your tools, you talk about awareness of triggers, and that must be tied to all of the emotions, actually.
Absolutely. Are there external or internal triggers that send you off? An internal trigger, I mean, I think in the 12-step world, they say, don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, right? So all of those, you're sure to have the difficult emotions if any of those are at play. And then external triggers. If you know you're going to something that could be potentially triggering, prepare. Meditate in advance. When you're, for instance, it's the holidays. For a lot of people, that's an enormous trigger. So what do you need to do to take care of yourselves to even prevent these things from arising, if that's possible?
Yeah. And in your notes from the course, you have quite a few questions that support cognitive reframing, and then tips on working with distorted thinking. That can be really helpful for people as well.
It's so helpful to recognize when our thoughts are distorted. And it's not easy to do, because oftentimes when we're in it, we think it's right or real. So that's why I was suggesting things like asking yourself, is that true? Is that really true? Do I have counter evidence? And also talking to someone who knows you well and saying, I'm worried about this. And they might say, wow, you don't have to go there, whatever.
Yeah. Setting up the team of people around you, whether you're paying them or they're your best friends, but having the right team of people around you when you're going through these really difficult, challenging situations. And then just very briefly, because I know you're about to start your sabbatical, I don't want to take you too far into it, but can you just give like a few tips on, you have a whole nother course, so just a little bit of how you turn an obstacle into an ally?
Yeah. The received wisdom is that when we're having an obstacle in our life, it's a problem. And there's a good reason we feel it, because it feels that way. And okay, it's almost Thanksgiving and I'm planning to make something and I can't get to the store and then they're out of it. And these are genuine obstacles. And maybe this isn't the best example because it's perhaps a bit trivial, but the idea with the course of turning obstacles into allies is that these challenges can actually become great teachers for us, and that we can harness them to learn more and more about ourselves and how we handle adversity. And we can learn about the obstacles instead of feeling like it's a problem and it's out to get me. And the example that I sometimes use is, if you're going on a camping trip, and everybody has this idea that on the camping trip, it's going to be beautiful and the weather's going to be great. And then always there are obstacles on camping.
Right.
It rains, the campsite isn't what you expected. There's all these things. So instead of it being like, it ruined my trip, we say, wait a minute, that was my trip. That was it. It wasn't obstacles. It was part of life. And what did I learn here? And usually they make the best stories later on.
Exactly.
They give us more empathy and compassion when we go through these obstacles. So obstacles are really, really super interesting learning area. And in the class, I talk specifically about where these obstacles manifest themselves in our meditation practices, and then how that shows up in life. So the five main obstacles are sleepiness, restlessness, aversion, craving or desire, and doubt. And those are the five ones. And then we look at them, each of them more deeply in meditation and in life.
Yeah, those are big ones. Diana, I could talk to you forever. Thank you so much for taking the time before closing down your computer and having a life, another life, a quiet life, having fun and being playful. I'm so happy you were able to be here today.
Oh, well, thanks for inviting me. And it's always fun to talk to you. I really enjoy it a lot.
I always love having Diana on Untangle. You can learn more about her at dianawinston.com and check out the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center if you want to take courses or listen to their meditations. As always, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions, email us at untangle@choosemuse.com. And don't forget to check out MuseS for last-minute gifts or to get started tracking your sleep in the new year. We thank you for being with us all year, and we're wishing you a very happy new year. We will see you next week. We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are five new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.